is that we would see a lot of these Twitter cappers posting like NBA stuff, like, oh, I'm going to be taking Paolo Banchero over 21.5 points. And you would see the line move in real time, like 30 minutes after the dude posted.
Hey, what's up, everybody? GP13 here with the first ever two-time guest of the podcast. I got my good friend, and I mean it, good friend, Drew Morgan, somebody that I've gotten to know more in real life and outside of betting. Great guy, really sharp bettor. Welcome back to the show. Drew, how do you feel to be the first two-time guest?
I feel great, man. I mean, we knew that I was eventually going to come back onto the podcast. But yeah, man, I'm really looking forward to, you know, discussing a bunch of different things with you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And this is your first video, video plus audio. So maybe for the YouTube audience, you don't know, you may have not have heard Drew's first interview, but it's really good, called Mamba Mentality on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. So go check that out after you listen to this. And, you know, we can, it'll be interesting to see, like, I know that you've made a lot of what I would say, like, moves recently, and, you know, how your perspective has changed, how your outlook on the industry has changed. But I wanted to talk about first, there is a post that RX Gamble, a video that she did where you commented under, and it's essentially on like going full time in this or not going full time. And you're at a stage where, you know, we've had this talk where, like, I think that you're looking to take that jump to full time. I'd love to hear your thought process around that and, like, how, what you would say to people who say, like, it's not necessarily doable or, like, don't go bet full time.
Yeah. So first I'll preface the fact that, you know, not everybody is, like, cut out to do this, to, like, do it full time. I yet to actually officially make the leap of faith and go full time, but within the next couple months, I will be doing that. And like I said, not everybody can do it full time, and not a lot of people can deal with the mental aspect of it. Like, this month, I've literally dealt with the worst variance I've ever dealt with, and I'm down a lot of money this month. And I can only imagine, you know, how that would feel in terms of like not having that 9-to-5, which I will come to terms with and be able to accept that. But the point is GP talks a lot about hourly and like how things could have a negative impact on your time. And it's gotten to a point like with my job where it's like negative EV if I'm at work, because it affects like how I can get specific bets in time, stuff like that. And if a job is like holding you back from making even more money than you would be, like compared to how much you make like at your job itself, then I feel like that is definitely a good time to potentially take that leap of faith. Now, I'm not saying like go out there and do it like when you don't have a lot of money saved up. I mean, I'm in a pretty good position financially where, you know, if things were to go bad, I can fall back upon that. But I do think that, you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons of everything. And once you're in a good spot financially and you have a winning method and you know how to seek out different edges, then you'll be fine. You know, there's a skill to finding new edges. Like, edges are, you know, constantly getting killed and going away, but there's going to be new ones that come about, and you take advantage of those while those last, and then they go away and then a new one comes. So, you know, there's always be things to play. Things are going to get harder as time goes on. But, you know, if you just have a knack for finding things like this, then you'll be fine in the long term. And I have a lot of confidence in myself, like when I officially make the jump. And, you know, I feel like I'll be pretty successful when I do.
And when you're weighing this decision, are you weighing it? Are you taking things that you've learned, the decision-making processes, your thoughts about like risk, return, hourly, and all of this that you've learned from betting and applying it to this decision, which like you might call like a life decision although I do find that like betting aids in life decisions. So was that like, was that the case here?
Yeah. I mean, I just looked at it in the terms of, you know, it's like, I don't know how to really describe it. I just thought that it just made absolutely no sense for me to just keep doing what I'm doing. And especially like, cause I'm in the military, so I would have had to like re-enlist or extend another year. Like there's no like me, you know, just working a 9-to-5 job and just putting my 2-week notice and then leaving. Like I have a specific time period to fulfill. But yeah, I mean, I looked at it and like, I wrote down like a pros and cons list. Okay. And the pros like clearly outweighed the cons. And also on top of it too, like it's like what I love to do, and I'm making, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say how much like I've made, but you know, I've made more than enough to, you know, be financially like comfortable, and like, I'm still doing good, even though like the correlation stuff and the easy low hanging fruit stuff has gone away. I'm still like finding success in different markets, but yeah, I mean, I feel like it's just, there's no other time to do it but now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I, on my podcast with Spanky, we were talking about this briefly, but it was exactly what you said. It's like, if your job's costing you money, that's a good time to leave. Like try and hold out on going full time until you're very sure that your main job's costing you money. And that was, you know, my situation. It seems like that was Spanky's situation, but to Gina's video, I do think that it, like you said too, it's not for everyone. It's not for most people. It's really hard. But I look at you and I'm like, oh, you're going to make it because like you said, you are confident in finding that next edge. Like we had easy correlation stuff in DFS. Anybody could do that. And you took advantage of that. It seems like you built up kind of a war chest and you're ready to go on to the next thing. Like, was that kind of the strategy? It's like, you know, use this and then find the next thing and help, you know, what do you feel like coming out of correlation into that next edge finding, expedition?
So with like the new edges and stuff like that, it's just like always finding unique angles that like you are not finding on the screen. You know, a lot of what I'm doing is top down and finding stale numbers and just finding discrepancies in the market. But a lot of it is just thinking like completely outside of the box. Like I talk to, you know, my team and I tell them like, yes, we want to make sure that we're doing the things that, you know, keep the lights on, like finding the stale numbers, you know, chasing the steam, like that you discussed on your podcast with JFAR. Like we do those things, but it's just thinking of different angles. Like the fact that me and you, who are avid golf fans, didn't get any type of action down on the Wyndham Clark situation was such a bag fumble. And the fact that I was well aware that there was a good chance that he didn't, that there was no round four. And I was telling other people to hit it, but I wasn't. I actually didn't think far enough, or for whatever reason, was not thinking about the whole just top 20. I don't know why I wasn't thinking about that, but like in retrospect, it seems like a no brainer. But in my opinion, like where you're going to make a lot of your, you know, outsized returns are in those just like specific spots and those angles where, you know, I talk to people about like quantifying like the fair value of things of like a parlay or a straight bet. You know, something like this, you can't sit here and just like do the actual math. It's literally a massive win or you lose. And in those situations, the reward far outseeds, or the potential massive win far outseeds, like, you know, let's say, for example, I put $1,000 on it in round four place. Okay, $1,000. But if I were to put $1,000 on it and round four doesn't play, that ends up being, you know, $1 million on the top 20 bet. In those situations, it's like, okay, you know, $1,000 right now for me is like a unit. I'm losing a unit compared to, you know, becoming a millionaire before taxes. But
dude, the Wyndham Clark, I've never been more tilted. And my gambling career. Like, I see that as a missed seven figures I should have made and I didn't make. And that was a lesson. It's so tilting, but it's so spot on. Like, you need to be ready for those situations.
Yeah. Like, and something that I do need to work on is I've been presented a couple of these opportunities within the last couple months. So like these specific like spots, and sometimes my execution was on point, but then there's other times where my execution was incredibly poor. So like, for example, the Mikhail Bridges stuff, it happened a couple months ago where, he has this Ironman streak going, and, you know, there was people in the Nets who were, you know, just getting, you know, ruled out. And at that point, people, a friend of ours, Brett, he had this idea. Let's just take every single Mikhail Bridges under, because, you know, he did the same exact thing last year where he'll only play the first quarter and then he'll be out for the rest of the game. And I was like, that's honestly a brilliant idea. And then going back to what we were just discussing, like, you know, how are you calculating the math or the fair value behind it? There's really not. It's he either plays the full game and, you know, he potentially like some of those bets win or lose, or he only plays the first quarter and pretty much all those bets hit. And at a certain point, you know, you have to realize like you have to do this. But in regards to the execution of it, I should have parlayed them. And for whatever reason, I was not thinking in the right state of mind to do that. And I should have just parlayed every single full game prop, and it would have paid out even better. And on top of that, too, if you were to parlay it instead of just taking the straights, you can get potentially less down. So like in a certain situation, you know, where there's a little bit more risk, you can get less down, because like on certain things I'm more limited on, I can get less down and still have that, you know, upside potential of winning with less downside of it losing compared to just taking everything as a straight. But yeah, man, I mean, I definitely do need to think about that. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact of thinking constantly and being somewhat prepared for those moments. Now, every different angle can be unique in its own entirety. You know, the Mikhail Bridges angle is a little bit different than the Wyndham Clark angle, but what they all have in common is that, you know, they can win or lose, or there's absolute massive upside with them hitting. And that's just something that I definitely need to like constantly like have in the back of my mind. When those angles appear to us, we already have that plan set up and we execute immediately.
100%. And I know people who have like juiced up VIP accounts that they literally save for like Black Swan events like that to just hit once and roast. And I don't think that's a terrible idea. Sometimes it's hard to pass on some, you know, 5% edge that you see and you want to play into that account. But the thing is, when you have those situations come up, they could be seven figures in such a, and it's okay to have a big part of your P&L made up with spots like that. Totally okay. And like, I think that's probably optimal, even though it's harder to conceptualize as a stable job. You know, you're still wanting to go and attack those spots for as much as you can. And I think what you said, so when I was thinking about Wyndham Clark, it's like, it's the parlay thing, right? It's like, you could have bet Wyndham Clark, what, plus 300 to win, something like that. Is that like what he was? Yeah. So you bet him plus 300 to win. And if the tournament's canceled, you know, he wins. And then you get, you know, you get 3-1. Yeah. And that's great. So you're getting, so basically, yes, he could, if they play, of course, he has a good chance to win. But it's like, okay, that bet's saying, you know, he, you know, that bet's saying, like, if the tournament's canceled, you automatically 3x your money. Well, why don't you get a bet that's when the tournament's canceled, you automatically, like, 1,000x your money.
Yeah.
Because you could do that. And that's the top 20 parlay. And that's where those bets were so genius, because you're betting on the same thing. You're betting on tournament to be canceled, but you're just, instead of, you're price shopping, instead of getting plus 300, you're getting plus, you know, 10,000.
Yeah.
And that's a much better price.
Yeah. You know?
So, that's where, I definitely fumbled the bag on that too. But I think it's really important to learn from, because it's more important to learn these situations because they represent such an outsized portion of your income as a sports bettor. Mm-hmm. So learning from these, it's so important instead of learning from like kind of your run of the mill 2% top down edge, right?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, we were both pretty tilted, I'm sure, to miss that. But you know, yeah, the next seven figure opportunity, hopefully we'll be there with the bag open and see the money start pouring in because we missed this one.
Yeah.
Did want to talk about your, I think a question I get asked a lot, especially for people in your shoes, who were playing DFS, doing a little top down, correlation. What do you say to somebody who's now having to make the jump to sports books, whether it be onshore, offshore, who maybe DFS left their state, maybe they were, you know, doing a live arbitrage strategy and, you know, their accounts have kind of gotten roasted. Like what would you tell somebody who's trying to take that next step into being a little more resilient of a bettor with a couple of different angles who hasn't gotten there yet?
So I would say if you're going onto the sports books, I would figure out exactly like what sports books are good at what things. You know, FanDuel's gonna be good at some things compared to Caesars is good at some things. You know, BetRivers surprisingly is actually pretty good at some things. And then like just figuring out like what each market is like good at and what they specialize at. So like I'll give you an example, like with college basketball props and stuff like that, offshore definitely tends to be like a general outlier compared to the rest of the market. And you'll see like a lot of island stuff on a screen. Oh, it's 8-9% EV compared to the rest of the market. And then you would look at a specific sample size of bets and you would realize, why am I not winning like way more than I am? Well, there's a reason as to why that's happening because, you know, they're sharp at that market. So going around and figuring out like who is sharp on what market, and then that's where you okay, those are where their strengths lie on those books, then realize where are those specific books' weaknesses. So like FanDuel is notorious for being very bad at openers, and it doesn't really matter what sport. They're a little bit better at NBA compared to others, like with prop. I'm specifically talking about props. I'm not talking about like main market stuff like that.
Okay.
This is for the smaller better. Like specific props, like NFL props, they were off all the time on open. Some college basketball stuff, like there will be massive discrepancies as the rest of the market. So seeing where they can be exploitable, finding the lower hanging fruit at first and just, you know, develop a winning strategy on those specific books. It's like offshore, they can be, you know, really, really slow to react to some NBA news. So you can capitalize on some stale stale lines on, you know, a specific player being out. And this can go alongside of spreads or totals or money lines, whatever. But really, it's just understanding the enemy, knowing what they're good at, knowing what they're not good at, and hitting them in those specific spots of weakness. You know, I'm not talking to the guys out there who are originating and are able to, you know, they have their lines like in their mind and they're able to, you know, have movers get down for them wherever. This is more so just a smaller guy who, you know, just wants to be a winner. Like they moved on from the super easy correlation stuff that we're getting last year. It's like, all right, what's the next step? And just knowing where books can be attacked is super paramount because you can win, you know, a lot of money just by, you know, capitalizing on that strategy.
And when you're doing this tracking for books, is this through tracking your own bets and looking at P&L? Or?
Yeah. So it goes through my own bets, but it also goes like I talk to a lot of people and a lot of other people like had the same exact results. Like I'll give you an example. So last year, people were having, you know, bad results betting FanDuel strikeout lines relatively closer to when the game actually started because they would see that FanDuel would be on an island compared to the rest of the market. It's like, oh, I'll just take this island's play. And the results were not good. And then our team, we like why don't we consider, you know, FanDuel the sharp compared to the rest of the market? And then we would find the best price compared to FanDuel. And we were seeing great results. Now, I'd say that, you know, you would need a much larger, amount of bets to, you know, conclude that they are the sharp, but that strategy worked. And in my opinion, it's really important. Like, a lot of people automatically like rule out a certain book as just like a absolute like clown book. But even though a book can be a clown book, they can still be sharp in certain spots. Like, I was listening to the Circle Is Off podcast, and they said the same thing where Pizzula and Johnny, they were saying how like they would play on or certain markets, and then they were losing way more than they should have when the number and the EV percentage was really good, but they were losing. There's a reason as to why, you know, they were losing, is because, you know, that clown book is actually like, you know, it could be pretty good at some things. So it's really important just to be open-minded to that aspect, is that, you know, these books actually can be good at something and specialize at something.
Yeah, I think that's a great strategy. It's like, start tracking and start trying to find out niche spots, markets, single markets, whether it's FanDuel strikeouts or, you know, whatever, PRA for basketball. I have no clue like what the good prop markets are, honestly. But keep rating your books. I think almost every like successful bettor has some mental ranking in their mind of how books stack up in the markets that they specialize in. And whenever you find a book that's really, really sharp at a specific thing, it's such a hack, because you don't have to come up with your own number. You wait for them to post. You can bet into the market when it's all painted the exact same number, and you can just bet right into the market. It won't even cause too much frustration from whoever's taking that bet, because they'll look over and they might be, you know, FanDuel might see Pinnacle at that, and they might see Circa at that, and they're like, oh, okay, well, whatever, I'll take it. And there's, you know, it's a very good way to do what I would call is like advanced top down. And yeah, that's definitely something that Spanky hinted at on our podcast when he was saying like, that's his favorite spot. Find a book that's, you know, when the market's all painted five, find the book that goes to four and be able to bet into the market, because it solves two of your problems. A, you don't have to originate, and B, you can bet into a market that looks like it's all the same number, when the reality is, you know, there might be that one island that is stronger than the market. So I think that's a great next step, because it takes that top down mindset. You still don't have to come up like and originate your own plays, which comes with like a lot of risk and time that goes into that. And it helps your longevity. It makes you understand the markets better. I think that's great advice, actually. I think I'm going to start telling people that when they come ask me.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed like the conversation where Spanky was saying like the more advanced like top down approach, in terms of like, okay, in these situations, I know that this book reacts this certain way, and just knowing their specific tendencies is like so crucial. But another thing though too is that he's so well connected within the industry that he just knows like whoever's getting down. I forget the specific originator, but Spanky pretty much knew like who the two was taking, because he would see a specific action getting down, and he would just know, you know, it's this guy, this betting syndicate. Whereas like someone like myself, I'm nowhere near to that level yet. And like talking to the more just like, you know, top down better, like we're not going to know. Like if you see, you're just looking at an odd screen, you're seeing specific movement on this book or the general market is moving a certain way, you know, we're not going to be able to pick up whether or not is that real sharp action getting down, is that, you know, square action getting down on a mainline thing. My team, we've been able to identify with the prop market in general, is that we would see a lot of these Twitter cappers posting like NBA stuff, like, oh, I'm gonna be taking Paolo Banchero over 21.5 points, and you would see the line move in real time, like 30 minutes after the dude posted, like on DraftKings, and the line would just move a lot. And at that point, we knew like that's more square action, like that dude and his followers are, you know, taking that bet. So that line is getting, you know, moved, DraftKings moved based off the liquidity. and you know, it's shifting, whereas like you see it on an odd screen and it's like, oh, that's a really good play. But
yeah,
there's more context that goes behind the fact of, oh, that's just a good number. So like that's plus EV in a five pick on Prize Picks. Like that's why I think it's very important in terms of you see a number on an odd screen, but then understanding as to why that number is. Like, why is it an outlier? Why is it off, you know, the rest of the market? Because then when you can actually understand and know why it is, then that can make it a good bet instead of just blindly taking a plus EV number on a screen.
I can't agree more. And I think one thing I've learned from you and your crew is how you react. I mean, you guys are so plugged into the prop market. So I think, you know, A, you know that market as well as anybody. But B, the Twitter capper thing was new to me. I actually just assumed there's no way these Twitter, you know, Twitter cappers, whatever, we won't name and shame, but
yeah,
like, who have hundreds of thousands of followers. I still thought they can't move markets, because in my mind, you know, I was coming at it from more of a sides totals, you know,
yeah, exactly,
bigger market. But the reality is, you know, if you have a prop that was probably posted at, you know, 500 limits or something, or 1,000 limits, and then you have someone who has 200,000 followers, that's the amount of liquidity coming into a prop is significant. And it probably doesn't happen until, you know, so they have like their bells and whistles are going off. Like, we got 100,000 on, you know, whatever, you know, whoever, you know, shy, you know, over PRA, like, you know, what's going on?
You want to know something funny? So like, I'm not going to disclose the edge, because it's still somewhat out there, but it's nowhere near as strong as it once was. But we would see this stuff going on, and on a certain platform, we would play the reverse of their plays, because what would happen is that this platform would juice the fuck out of the other side, and the other side would be so EV, like we're talking like 20% or higher.
Yeah.
And because for whatever reason, this platform was not able to, you know, balance it out properly, and we would hammer the other side. And these plays, like the ROI on them was pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, these guys, like, they can move the prop markets a little bit, but, you know, dude, if Alex Caruso said, oh, I'd like Heat -4.5, he ain't moving the fucking market. Like, everybody knows that. Like, you know, these softer books, they're just moving to whatever Pinnacle and Circa has, you know, but with the props and stuff like that, like, they definitely can move those based off of liquidity in those more niche markets.
And do you think that it moves then only at certain books where you would say like have a high recreational customer base?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, and the thing is that when this dude is tweeting this out, like his followers are only just playing on the recreational books. It's not like, you know, they're going to Pinnacle and playing props on them. I haven't really studied more so like how Pinnacle does it, but I'm just more so like, we've seen them in real time, like with DraftKings and FanDuel specifically, where they will just move the markets just based off of them hammering the overs.
And that makes a lot of sense, because what are the two most, you know, widely available books, have the most customers, whatever, like who are the people that are going to tail, you know, some guy on Twitter who did a write-up, where are they going to play? The first name that came to my mind was DraftKings.
Yeah. You know,
FanDuel seems a close second. Like that, the why checks out. And I love that you talk about knowing what's going on behind the odd screen, because the odd screen is just like a really condensed, quick interpretation of reality. But like, it's not the reality that is going to best allow you to make money. It might be able to give you the information the quickest, but when you go and think about these things, like you're thinking about in the prop market, that's when you start really getting what's going on, right? Like you're like, oh, I get it. I see how this market ticks. And then when you see how it ticks, then all of a sudden you're anticipating, you're reacting, and you're like making all the right moves when it comes to figuring out like when to play, how to play it, you know, X, Y, Z, right?
Yeah. So like, I'll give you an example in terms of like, just looking at a screen and seeing a good number, but not knowing the context of it. So like a friend of ours, I'm not going to say who it was, but he posted some plays like, yo, this is 8% to FanDuel and DraftKings on this specific book. It was a Kevin Huerter over, I think, 3.5 rebounds. And it was like really off the rest of the market. And it was, you know, really good EV percentage compared to those books. And me and Halo were like, dude, this is not a good bet. And there's a reason as to why. Because Sabonis, he was supposed to be out, but he was at morning practice. And at that point, we knew he was going to play. So it was fake EV. So like just seeing a number on a screen, you had no idea the context of the situation. And it really wasn't a good bet. And that bet ended up getting really bad CLV. And it was not a good bet at all. But I remember I used to think that like you don't need to know about sports or know about this like to be a successful bettor. You still can win, but everything is an information game. Like the more information that you can have at your expense, knowing where all these players are doing, knowing the status of them, knowing if the line is shifted based off of their injury status, everything is important. And by knowing the context of all these things and then seeing bad numbers, then you can actually make a good decision, you know, instead of, oh, I'm just gonna take this blind EV play, you know, understand why it could potentially be bad. You know, if I see something on Hard Rock, I know that Hard Rock is very, very slow to react, you know, to certain things. So like I already know in the back of my mind, if I see like something that's really off, that's automatically just hit it because mm-hmm. they're not good at anything.
Bang, bang, yeah. Hard Rock.
Yeah. 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 No, you know what's funny? It. You know what's funny? So like I'll say it now because like I'm finally limited, but I made like over like 40K on there in like the last 2.5 months until they finally limited me. And what's funny is I got limited because I played a full blown airline like an idiot. Because
was that the Chubb Classic thing? Dude. All right, let's walk through this decision. We're going to do a postmortem on Drew's Hard Rock account. Okay, tell the story.
So I was just digging around because I was bored Friday night, and I saw like I was just clicking around on the Chubb Classic, and I was looking at the leaderboard of the players, and I saw.
Tell the viewers what the Chubb Classic is.
The Chubb Classic, it's just a PGA Tour event for the older players.
PGA Tour.
Yeah, the senior PGA Tour event. This is as niche as it gets right here, guys. Yeah. And it just was an event for, you know, older champions that played on tour who won. And I was looking at the first round results, and I saw that Rocco Mediate, if you don't know who that was, went toe-to-toe with Tiger Woods, 2008 U.S. Open, absolute classic.
Epic.
But yeah, epic golf moment. But he was up by 3 strokes compared to he was up by 3 strokes and he was in first place. And I was looking, you know, at prices, and I'm like, I'm looking at Hard Rock to win. I'm like, where the hell is Rocco Mediate at? Why is he not at the top? And at the time, I didn't even like see like other markets to see like what the odds were. And I scrolled all the way down. I'm like, plus 10,000. What the fuck? It's like clearly an obvious airline. So then I was searching out like other books. I saw MGM, Caesars, Bovada, all at them at plus 500. I'm like, yo, like I have to hit this. And at a certain point, I was weighing the pros and cons. Like you talked about this, and you, Mr. Limited, talked about this in terms of like in these certain spots, you know, do you think you should hit it? So like on most books, if you hit a blatant airline, they will get pissed off and they will just ban you, or, you know, they could severely limit you. But the reason as to why I hit this is because a couple months ago, early in our year, me and you talked about it. I'm not going to say exactly what happened, but I saw a live line that was plus 1400 when it should have been minus 400. And I told my team to hit it because I was already maxed out on that specific player as a golf thing. And I couldn't hit it, sadly. And that play ended up hitting. And they didn't end up getting limited. So I was like, okay, I've seen this. I've seen other things too. I think the pros outweigh the cons. I'm going to hit this obvious airline. And they end up refunding it after the second round. And I ended up getting limited. But the thing is that I haven't met a single person who's made as much as I did on Hard Rock before getting limited, because they're known for limiting very fast. And it's a theory of mine that Florida Hard Rock, they might have a different like trading team. This is complete theories and speculation, a different trading team compared to the other Hard Rocks in other different states. So like, I think that they might have just been focused on getting, you know, the carpet rolled out and just having people betting on their platform compared to finding, you know, these winning bettors, running CLV reports, looking at the P&L of these winning bettors, and then finally limiting them to pennies. But I was able to get away with making, you know, 40 grand the last couple of months, which I thought I was gonna get limited like after a week, because I was in, you know, going back to our conversation, knowing the enemy, like knowing the platform you're betting on. Like I thought I was only gonna last a week. And ended up lasting a couple of months. So
I was surprised by that too, honestly. Yeah, I don't what like I think your theory like the thing is when books open, that's the best time to sign up, because they're A, they have to do a lot of stuff. B, they want to show good numbers, good, you know, volume, good, you know, yeah. As a sharp bettor, you're giving them good volume, right? You're not giving mm-hmm. them the volume they want. But if it's like their opening week and they want to tell their board they took X amount of bets and they say our theoretical holds X, Y, Z, because they calc it off the actual dollar volume and not really based on a sharp square report, you know, they might give you a shot those first few weeks. So this is for like the North Carolina people who this is coming out for.
Huge,
right? Like yeah. It's time to get in there. And Florida, the Hard Rock, I mean, when did Hard Rock launch?
So they relaunched in, I believe, November of last year. And then right. I got on and I've been hitting them for the last couple of months.
Do you think there's any like, did you have any, like, I guess, tactics in your play that you want to use to increase longevity? Or were you just thinking, I'm going to go in there, I'm going to get the money? I mean, clearly, dude, if you're pounding a Chubb Classic arrow, yeah. Like it's.
So when I first got on, I was not like, I've learned a lot over the last couple of months in terms of, you know, priming accounts, setting, like running cover bets, stuff like that to get books off your trail or off your scent or whatever. And my strategy going into it, like this was before I knew any of it, it was purely just frontal assaulting them, finding the best numbers, find discrepancies in the market and just hammering them. And yeah, it wasn't like smart. Like this goes back to like knowing, you know, the enemy. So like I know, I'm not going to disclose the books because like this will affect, you know, my long-term P&L, but I know certain books where it just priming the accounts, it doesn't matter, but priming accounts on other books 100% matters. Like I know certain people who lost over $10,000 on a certain platform, it made well over $100,000 on that account. And there's a reason, because, you know, they might've been granted VIP access or, oh, this person lost $10,000. Like we don't care about them. Like, you know, this is all theories and speculations. Like we don't really know what goes on behind the doors in terms of, you know, these trading teams, like looking at specific reports and stuff like that, of these bettors. But yeah, I mean, I was not priming the account whatsoever. I wasn't.
I didn't suspect that in the nature that you got kicked out the door, but it's good data to have, because it's a tough discussion and I agree with you. There's certainly places it matters and it doesn't matter. And, you know, there's places where I would, you know, it's a guarantee in my mind that I'm going to go, you know, give X amount of square, you know, close to tip main market action to a book for a while before, you know, start going in with what I would call the less desirable action. And then others where, like Hard Rock, you should go take the money. And I think, you know, if you're at a stage where you don't have these big edges in the back pocket, it's not worth it, honestly, to think about priming the account. And you could end up, like Drew, making 40K, just being blatantly obvious, crushing them, right? So like, if you go in and like prime the account and lose money and don't have an edge, like think about how much money you lost out on when, you know, that you could have just gone in and bet normal and made 40. So I think it's a nuanced discussion that requires a lot of experimentation on where to, you know, poke and prod and, you know, give a little action to them, or, you know, go just full on, like you said, at Hard Rock, because that ended up working great.
Yeah. Yeah. This all just stems based off of the idea of knowing like what the books you're playing on. Like when I am full-time and I'm in Arizona where I have access to everything, there's going to be strategies in terms of, okay, we're in a frontal assault, these books with our betting partners. And then there's going to be, you know, books where we're going to ensure that we're getting a lot of square action, main market stuff, close to tip off, close to kickoff. And something else that Mr. Limited talked about recently, where betting on your hometown team. I think that that's, I think that just like is a smart idea. But a lot of this, you know, going back to what we were saying, is like speculation and theories. But I think that definitely like it's a smarter approach. Like it just makes sense. But just knowing like whatever books, like I'm not going to go and like, I'll just say it, I'm not going to go and prime a DraftKings account, because like they're so quick to fucking, you know, limit people and stuff like that. Even if you like are able to get square action down and then you flip the switch and become an AP, where, you know, they're quick to, you know, hit you. And if there are people who have had success from priming it and then winning a lot before they actually realize what you were doing, please reach out to me, because I would love to, because, you know, DraftKings has a lot of bad lines and a lot of stuff. So,
well, that touches on, so I was thinking you were talking about Spanky, and you were saying how Spanky has all these connections, this great network. When I think about you as a bettor, you have a lot of strengths, like obviously being incredibly hardworking is one of them, but I think that's like kind of par for the course once you get to a certain level in sports betting. But like where I think you really excel, you're like a young Spanky. You've connected with all these people. Like you connected to me and I met Halo through you, and I've met so many people through you. And, you know, I don't know, it's probably your personality of just like being a social guy who's willing to help out, but like that has to be huge EV for you too in your overall betting career, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, dude, like networking and stuff like that. Like we talked about on the first podcast, and it's funny how like so much has like changed from there, because like I'm essentially like fucked everywhere, like limited everywhere. And it gets to a certain point where, you know, the only way to get the action down is through the betting partners. And,
for sure.
You know, if you're just like this nerdy dude who like doesn't know how to talk to people and know how to network, you know, your AP journey is just going to end once you, you know, get limited. Or you might be able to go through your mom or your brother. Actually, I wouldn't say mom, because, you know, female gambler, you know, it's probably a red flag. I mean, there are winning female gamblers out there, but
for sure,
the trading teams that see a winning female gambler, it's like, oh, this is definitely a dude just using a new account. Like, we're going to get rid of his ass.
I feel like it's a bigger flag. But I will say, have successful female betting partners. So
yeah,
don't auto roll it out. But if it's your girlfriend or wife that you live with, that might not be the point.
Yeah, wouldn't be optimal. Especially wife, same name, same address.
Well, yeah, that's same PayPal. Yeah, I had someone DM me, Drew. They were like, hey, my wife is interested in starting gambling. This happens. You know, a lot of people's, once people's wives start to get interested in gambling, they send me a DM. And they're like, my wife's interested in gambling. If I were to use my PayPal account to fund her at the sports book, would that be bad? Yes. Yes. If you sent money from your PayPal, which is attached to your account at that sports book, that one just kind of popped to mind, but some of the just like so obviously gonna get flag, ban, whatever. Don't do that. Don't do the super obvious stuff.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you honestly like have no idea. Like, I'm not gonna disclose everything, but like there's so much like a strategy. You know, we talk about like the science of sports betting, like knowing the numbers and knowing if it's a good bet and actually like running the numbers and the math behind it. But the art of sports betting to me is like so much more interesting in terms of like getting accounts, knowing how to get paid out, like doing specific things to ensure that you get paid out and not get stiffed, getting betting partners. Like there's so much more that goes into it besides just winning. And Spanky, like one of his best podcast episodes, like winning is just the beginning. Like that really resonated with me because that is like at a time, like I listened to that when like I was essentially like fucked everywhere. And it got to the point where it's like, all right, what's the next step? And the next step was, you know, getting betting partners and knowing like, all right, I gotta get action down, through these guys, and then ensuring, that they're, getting paid out and not doing stupid things to ensure that they get paid out. There's just so much more that goes into it, into this space to be a successful bettor than just knowing like how to run the numbers. And there's certain bets where, you're not even like actually like quantifying whether or not it's like this amazing bet. There's just crazy angles sometimes where, you got to determine whether or not the juice is worth the squeeze. And, just being like an odd screen guy, like I'm not trying to sit here and just shit on odd screens, because a lot of what I do is just picking off stale numbers and finding, those inefficiencies in the market. But you also, if you want to like have those outsized returns, you have to like think outside of the box and, like look at things a little bit differently.
Dude, for sure. I don't even know where I heard this, but someone's like, if tying your shoe granted you like a monetary return, everyone would do it. And then the return would go to zero. Like if it was as easy as like, anything was as easy as tying your shoe, then like, why the fuck would you do it? So I think when you're talking about like that next step, the next step is thinking about the art or the operational side of sports betting at scale, which is so much harder than, or so much different than, sports betting solely through you are, clicking in all your bets and you're using an on screen and, et cetera, et cetera. The scale of sports betting is a whole different ball game and it's daunting. So most people don't do it. But I think like you're obviously somebody who would like accept that challenge and see that at the other end of the headache, the administrative headache, getting your betting partners to do the right shit headache and, potentially getting stolen from or whatever.
Yeah.
Like at the end of all of that, there's a huge pot of gold and most people don't want to do it. So that's why, that's why that's there.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I'm still green to all of this, in terms of the betting partner and stuff like that. Like, but I study like all the greats within our industry and I try to mimic like what they're doing and stuff like that. I've already had like certain like frustrations like from doing a lot of this stuff. Like there's times where I'll see some like FanDuel opener on some, round scores and I'm like, dude, this is so fucking off. And like I'm just texting so many people like,
yep,
like yo, can you get this down? Cause I can't, I don't even live in a state that has FanDuel. And then people will text me like 20, 30 minutes later and the line moved like 20 cents. It's like, dude, fucking come on, man. Like be at your phone. Like you're supposed to be at your phone, like at these certain times. And, I'm sure you experience like these situations a million times. It's just something, newer to me that, I'm having to deal with, but I just have to accept the fact that that's a part of the game. You're going to miss things because people have other things going on and they're not going to be able to get it down. And what could be horrible is like in those crazy spots, like that we were talking about, like some of those are so time sensitive that you can miss out on those if people aren't, paying attention. Like, let's say, for example, if you were to do the Wyndham Clark bet, there was a small period of time, where, you can get those in. If people were not paying attention, then, you could have missed out on millions. And I think like, that honestly would hurt way more that would hurt way more because then it'd be like all those people had to do was just click the bet in and then it would have won compared to just not thinking about it. And then, realizing, wow, what the fuck was I doing? Like, why didn't I hit that?
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
You're 100%.
I'm sure you've dealt with that.
not on the scale of, like on the Wyndham Clark scale. But yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, betting partners will make five figure mistakes. Like, it'll happen. So if that's like not something that you're, that's not something you're gonna be able to deal with, like, that's gonna be really tough. Because I remember there's this interview that Billy Walters did with that guy, Darren Rovell or whatever, the Action Network guy who everyone shits on. And Darren asked Billy, he's like, have any of your runners, any of your betting partners, whatever, have they ever made bet the wrong thing? And Billy's like, yeah, dude, I've been doing this for 30 fucking years. Like, of course, like, it's happened thousands of times. But like, it's an obvious frustration of that. But at this time, like, you're building a business and it's cool.
Yeah.
There's other skills you learn through learning how to scale that are great life skills, great business skills to learn. So like, it's also an exciting problem to solve, and it's a little different. But
Billy was doing that like when like technology was nowhere near to what it is now. So like, I feel like that would open up the door to even more mistakes. Like, you know, I've seen the clips of him like where he's doing the 60 Minutes thing, and he was like calling in like bets like to his like betting partners to like get stuff down. And then he was talking about like, yo, we're gonna phony this game up. And he was like telling them to hit the other side so they can come back and hit the other side, and that it'd be way better. But like, dude, I can only imagine like that shit must have happened so many times. You know, it's not as simple as me just texting you or a quick call. Like, you know, back when he was doing it, like his guys were definitely making more mistakes. And that's why, like, you know, when people like say like Billy Walters is the GOAT or this or that, like, he's the one who set up like all of this stuff. Like, that's why, like, you know, he is the GOAT, because he's the one who set the standard for all these things. And, you know, just using the same, you know, formula in terms of what he did. So I still got to listen to that Joe Rogan episode that he went on.
It's good.
Oh, you listened to it?
I listened to it, and I was going to write something about it, but it's like, the first hour 20 is all about betting, and then the second half is about his court case. So if you're, you know, at this point, if you're just trying to get the betting tidbits, listen to the first part. But what you said about Billy is spot on. It's like, it in many ways, like, the modern solution of scaling betting is, you know, built on what Billy Walters did. And his interview, there's a few very interesting things, but he talks about, you know, working with 50 plus handicappers. You know, he built a framework where he has outs, he understands how the markets work, he's handicapped himself, and a handicapper can come to him who might not have a bankroll, who might not understand general sports betting nuance or market knowledge, and that they can come to him, and he can essentially like max that handicapper's knowledge, and if they lose their edge, he can find another because he has the bankroll, he has all the knowledge, like, and that's longevity and that scale. And that's what's I think different than or where you go from being an individual to being like a company, which is what Billy, you know, does. And he says he spends millions on R&D, which I don't doubt, and having that money to spend on handicappers, accounting, grunt work, whatever it is, that's going to be very hard for an individual to compete with. So I think, like, when I think of what I want to do, and, you know, when you're talking about, you know, moving to this next stage, I think Billy Walters definitely set a great framework for how to do this at scale, which, like, I would agree, you know, that to me is the GOAT. I know other people might have other opinions, but speaking of business, I want to give TCE a shout out. You know, what are we cooking up on the side? You know, as we know, Billy Walters had other businesses, car dealerships, golf courses, as does Drew Morgan. He's better, but he has now his own business. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, so myself, Vic, Halo, and Driz, we open up a Discord for people. There's so many people like that have reached out to me and like wanted to know what I was doing. Funny enough, like, I would get a lot of flack back from people. I don't know if it's like I can be a bit polarizing on Twitter, but like everybody just assumed that I had this paid Discord. Cause like when I would say like the crew or whatever, people just automatically assumed I had a paid Discord. I never had one until, you know, a couple of days ago. So I always thought that was funny when people like just thought I had one, but now I actually do. And you could, you know, join. I'm sure GP will put the link to the board below. But yeah, you join. We have three different tiers you can join at. Something that we specialize on and we're going to be doing is what we call NBA Power Hour, where we're literally calling out the plays in real time, because as top-down bettors, a lot of what we're doing is, you know, based off of speed. And we're reading injury reports. We're reading lines. And by being in the voice calls, you're going to better ensure the fact that you're getting the price that we're saying for a proper side total at the time that we're getting it. Because a lot of times, if we're to take a screenshot, then put it in there and then say how much to play it at, it could be gone at that time. But if we're saying, yo, load this up or be ready for this or hit this, like the more likely that individual is going to get that bet in. And it ensures the fact that, you know, our members are actually getting what they're paying for. But yeah, I mean, definitely something that, you know, our team like is trying to do different from the rest of the market in this, this space that we have, is, you know, doing these voice chats like every single day. And we're going to be doing one today as well, where we're in there for like 2 to 3 hours, just, you know, calling things out in real time, because the closer to tip off with NBA, the more likely that like a random player is going to get ruled out or someone's going to get inserted into the starting lineup, where you can, you know, find those spots where certain books are slow to adjust to those announcements.
Yeah, I think it's I think the voice chat thing is awesome, because also people who are in there who are newer, like it's standard for you to be on call with Halo, you know, and Vic and Driz, and you know, that's whatever, you're talking your language, you don't think much of it, but people listening to you guys talk about spots, what you're weighing, what you don't care about, you know, how quickly you do need to do certain things, like there's also just learning by absorbing being on those calls too. So not only are you getting, you know, as that's literally as fast as you can, but like you're picking stuff up. I think it's a great 2-for-1. So yeah,
no, we've had a lot of people like ask us questions, and people are already like just picking up like on so much of the stuff that we're talking about. Because like with this NBA injury news and this knowing lineups and teams, stuff like that, like, dude, I'm not gonna lie, it's like honestly like a full-time job. And like I'm an avid NBA fan. Like I watch a lot of NBA. I know a lot about the NBA, but like Halo and our contributor R-Dubs, like they are really, really, really on top of it. Like they'll tell you like all the, like, you know, like lower end tier players on the bench, and knowing if this player's out, then this player's gonna get more usage. And like, I know the main guys and stuff happens, and how much the lines will move and how much that person's props will move up or down. But like they are really well tuned with that type of stuff. And, you know, that goes back to the whole like networking thing and knowing like some people, you know, like just know more about like this specific sport than others. And that's why, like, you know, there's strength in numbers with us, you know, working as a team, where it's like, you know, someone might see something that the other person isn't seeing, or someone's going to know this information that the other person wouldn't know. But yeah, man, I mean, it's a fucking full-time job, like waking up every morning, seeing what the game's opened at the night before. Okay, has the line moved at all? And then there's like a skill to it too. It's not just, oh, you immediately go hit the line if this certain player's rolled out. Like, the line could be baked in, like the books could be, you know, accounting for that. Or sometimes you look at the line history, you look at the prop history, and you see it hasn't really moved much. Then we can make an inference that really isn't baked in. And especially if something, you know, like if it's just absolutely random, like there's no injury reports, there's no injury status, and then a player just gets ruled out of the blue, then we know right then and there, like, you know, that's not baked in. But it's a full-time job, man. And it's, you know, you have to be processing a lot of information, and it's so different compared to like the NFL, where it's just like once a week. Like with this, it's literally every fucking day. And these players like have no shame. Like, you know, they never want to play. You know, the fact that you come back from All-Star break and you're load managing the first night, fucking ridiculous, man.
Yeah, what was the break for?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. NBA better, you guys are crazy. You guys are crazy. You have to be plugged in. Like, there,
dude, it's honest. It's like, I love betting and stuff, like, but it can be so fucking draining, dude.
I bet. But there's a lot of money in NBA. Yeah. I know people who do injury stuff like you. You know, you guys make consistent, like, really, really good money. Yeah. And it's like, it's existentially easy to believe in, because your edge is like, okay, you know, you're getting news, you're acting quickly. Like, yeah, there's no way that, you know, if I don't know NBA, but I assume like a good player like LeBron, he gets ruled out and the market didn't know that. Pretty much, yeah, any bet you make, if you know, if you have like half a brain cell's worth of knowledge on the NBA, I'm sure it's plus EV. And, you know, yeah, so it's not like you're originating, you're like, oh, do I have an edge? Do I not have an edge? It's like, you're like, oh, this is obvious why I have an edge.
Yeah. And I think another thing too, as to why I like it so much, is that I can look at this and I know that I'm not getting fake steam. Like, if a player gets ruled mm-hmm. out and it wasn't accounted for, I'm not getting fake steam. I know that that play for sure is going to be good, compared to something like college basketball, where there's so many games, there's so many teams that, like, I see a lot of these, like, you know, plus EV plays on odd screen. And like, I have not had great success betting it. And I know a lot of other people haven't either, because it's just a bunch of bullshit steam. Like, if you're not playing openers and you're not seeing like what specific markets are way off to Circa or to bookmaker, like, people are just catching fake steam. And like, I feel like a lot of these college basketball originators just manipulate the fuck out of the line. So like, these steam chasers will take the wrong side and then they could play the other side. You know, that once again, that's all theories and speculation, but just going back into like knowing teams and stuff like that, like, I know these teams, I know these players. So like, I can better be able to pick up on like people doing nonsense like that. And if I'm playing like injury related stuff and it's like out of the blue, I just know for a fact that bet is going to get CLV and it's going to be very, very EV. And that gives me confidence, because I know that the actual strategy itself is working, and it's not like I'm getting bullshit value.
I love it. It's so important. Like, because, you know, I think one thing that people miss on Kelly is that Kelly assumes you know, it's known that you have this edge, right? So the more mm-hmm. confident you are, the higher percentage, you know, of Kelly theoretically you should go, right? And this is a pretty clear, obvious, you have an edge situation. So it also, from a bankroll, from a betting, just absolute return standpoint, you can comfortably like put in pretty solid size here if you have the right outs. So I think it's great. It's a great, you know, it's a really good angle. And for anybody who's like a grinder, who's looking to, you know, who's looking to spend some time in front of the screen, but like doesn't want to just put that time in front of like an odd screen where you might be getting, you know, kind of fake steamed or moved around by not knowing exactly what's going on. This is a really good step. And I think, yeah, like being on call with you guys, that's the perfect way to learn it. Like, it's well worth, even if you weren't to play any of the bets that these guys made, being on that call is so valuable. So valuable. Yeah. It'll just, the way you start to think about stuff, because that's what, you know, that's what these NBA, you know, prop experts do, is like, they know who's in, out, who, if someone subs in, you know, what's that worth, you know, all of this stuff. And it happens so quickly. So I think like,
yeah,
that's a great, it's honestly such a cool thing you're doing. It's so different from the other discords. I think it's so, so spot on, man.
Yeah. And like, there's so much stuff that like goes into it besides just like the injuries. Like, we like, just based off of like betting this stuff, we know like when certain teams are usually going to announce like news related to their team. So I'll give you an example. The Lakers, a lot of times you'll see like LeBron and AD are questionable every day, but like, for whatever reason, the Lakers specifically, they will wait like 30, 40 minutes to tip off to like actual make announcements like, this player's out, or this person has been put on the bench, this person been inserted into the starting lineup. And another thing too is like following specific accounts on Twitter. You know, there's some accounts on Twitter where they give absolute bullshit reports, like these beat writers and these other specific like news related accounts, and just knowing like, you know, this account could be potentially like, you know, just being like stupid and just saying like stuff that isn't true, and just being able to determine whether or not like, oh, the market like potentially moved off of this news, this could actually be like fake news that this account is reporting. And then knowing like, you know, there's one account out there that, you know, is like the de facto news account, which we have literally seen the books like lock once this account like tweets out within a certain period of time. And just knowing like all this information and news related stuff is super important. You know, it's a full blown like operation in terms of like just studying all this stuff, knowing if this is true or not, knowing how this a player is affected by this. It really is very demanding to do, man. Like it's draining. I'd much rather bet golf and win 75-1 Euro golf bets like I did this morning on Darius Van Dreyel.
Yeah, DVD. I saw that. Yeah. I was not on that. We've actually been not. We've basically taken the week off to make like some improvements and whatnot. But I saw a lot of our friends were on Van Dreyel. It's awesome.
Yeah, and that's something that like we haven't really talked about. But like, so like you do your own golf origination, and I'm sure you like look and see what DG's doing. But you do your own level of origination. And this is something that I need to honestly like rework with my own strategy, is that like with Data Golf and stuff like that, they have like very clear biases to certain players, and specifically players who are just incredibly good ball strikers. You know, Aaron Rye, like for whatever reason, they are obsessed with that guy.
Yeah. And they want to marry him.
Yeah. And just knowing like that DG, like they're a good source of information, but not just taking them as the gospel, like as a golf bettor. Like, for example, DG was like saying that Jack Knapp was like 20% EV today with his matchup. And then I'm just thinking in the back of my mind, okay, Jack Knapp has what, a 4 or 5 stroke lead on the field. Yep. Like the likelihood of him playing more conservative just to ensure the fact that he wins compared to the guy in the matchup that he's going against is going to play more aggressive to catch up to him. Like just blindly like taking what Data Golf says, it's 20% EV, this is 2-3 units quarter Kelly. Like you have to look at things and have context into them instead of just blindly trusting them. You know, it's not a smart strategy.
For sure. And don't get me wrong, like I love Data Golf. And I think a lot of what I learned about golf was I've read everything they've written. I know exactly how the Data Golf model works. So that way, like I understand where I would differ from it or where I wouldn't, what are potential strengths, weaknesses, etc. And like a lot of what I've learned came from those guys. So it's just like, but they can't be perfect.
Yeah.
And it's not really like they're not, you know, it's not their goal. It's your job as a bettor to use that info to the best of your ability. But yeah, the pressure effects of like it's a 4-shot lead, and then he's 7 clear of third place. So it's like essentially the matchup between him and Sammy, between Knapp and Sammy, and then there's really no one else relevant. So Sammy obviously needs to make up 4 strokes, and you know, Jake can hang on and, you know, shoot even par and probably win. So yeah, their incentives are so different, and Data Golf's not built for like a weird outlier case, because something like that doesn't normally happen. There's usually not like a 4-stroke lead and then 7 shots of separation to third. So whatever like pressure effect that's calculated, that, you know, standardized pressure effect that's calculated, it's not calculated off situations like that. I'm sure, in those situations, it's actually much, much higher pressure effect or strategy adjustment, you know, whatever it is.
I think the pressure effect is huge. And like, if you're to be originating, and like, I'm sure when you're building into your own model, like I, for last week and this, like this degen thinking, but just knowing how these players are, like Xander Schauffele and
Patrick
Antley.
Yeah, I knew what you were going to say. Yeah.
Like those are two players that have no it factor. And like Xander Schauffele is allergic to having the lead. Like he'll have the lead and then, oh, I have the lead and just fuck up instantly and to just give it all back. Like it just like knowing these players and like how they are, like, I don't know. Like, I think that if you're going to be modeling it, like that should be definitely going into the model, especially with golf being such a mental sport, you know, compared to a lot of other sports, and especially on Sundays too, when the pressure is really on. Just like knowing how to model that stuff is very important. And yeah, I mean, I just knew that Cantley and Xander were just not going to perform, and I'm glad they didn't because I do not like Patrick Cantley.
I think I had him in like DFS, but I also had Hideki in DFS, so it didn't matter.
Dude, he fucking went off, bro.
That Hideki back nine was bananas.
When he gets hot, he could be unstoppable.
That was true dart throwing. Like it was like a emphatic win. He was nowhere near the lead. That's how much of a swing it was from just Patrick.
Dude, this year has been crazy.
Performance. Yeah,
this year has been crazy. It's literally just long shot every time. Like, was Hideki the lowest or the shortest odds to win? Like 75-1.
Yeah,
this is insane, dude.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if it's been. I have theories on that. I think it's mostly random, but the courses have. There's been lift clean in place with like pretty soft course conditions for most of the year, which I think matters a little bit. But mostly just like a totally random start to the PGA year.
Do you think, I mean, me personally, I don't think that like the optics of the game are good, especially with like live. You're having a lot of these lesser tier players, and then on Sunday it's like the lesser tier players are in contention. You want to have your big guys like, you know, who are competing there on Sundays. Hopefully we get, sure. You know, the Masters is only like a month and a half away. Hopefully we get a good one, not just some rando winning.
I gave you some shit about your Masters pick on Twitter, but how about we do to cap it off, we each give a Masters pick because you like to bet golf. I like to bet golf. You go first because I'm gonna, and it can't be like Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah, that's the only Victor Hovland. Let me think about this first.
Okay, I'll go first. I for no reason in particular, I like Tony Finau.
Oh my god! Such a bias. What did you say to me in a tweet where I was like, if Tony Finau wins the Masters, pigs will fly out of my ass?
Yeah, that's right.
I think you said something like, "Damn, whatever day, it's going to be a bad day for you."
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be a bad day for Drew's ass when Tony slips on the green jacket. They'll have to custom make it for his just long, lanky frame too. It's going to be beautiful.
Why do you think he'd win?
Well, obviously Augusta sets up for his style of play. Like Augusta historically sets up for, long, good ball strikers. And it doesn't really matter how accurate you are off the tee. It matters a little bit, but he's not super inaccurate, but he can really let driver fly. You know, Augusta, he can hit a lot of drivers. He's a terrible putter, but I'm just hoping we catch him on a spike putting week. Augusta's already like, it really like distinguishes good ball strikers. So if we can get a spike putting week out of Tony, then.
Did you see, what was it? I forget the name of it. Farmers Insurance or farm. Yeah. Was it the Farmers Insurance or was it the other tournament at Torrey Pines where he was like one for eight within like 8 feet?
It was insane.
It was pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. I mean, also his style of putting with the toe pointed to the sky, it doesn't inspire confidence. And there's no way that's like checking out on his, if he's like in the putting lab, there's no way he's returning like good stats on that stroke. So maybe he changes his stroke by the Masters. We win.
Okay. I'll give you my pick, but I don't know if you consider this square. I mean, he is a real good player, but I'm gonna go with JT.
Wow. Okay. I see it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're buying low after Vieira, or yeah, he miscut. Yeah, I see that.
If JT can get hot, like he can, like if he comes out the gate hot and sustain that level of play, you know, I mean, there's no reason like why he can't win. But I think that, you know, there's other people obviously that I can think that could potentially win it, but that's gonna be my guy. What do you think of, like, do you think that Aubert is as good as like everybody is like pronouncing him to be? I mean, we know he's absolutely insane off the tee, but
yeah,
do you think that he's like,
well,
what is your opinion on him?
I feel like he's great, but he's not a top five golfer, of course, but
he's not polished enough yet.
And like a couple, you know, I think he's amazing, like for how young he is, for how quickly he's adapted to just being like a presence on the tour. It shows some level of professionalism that's hard to have that young. But yeah, he's probably a top 15 guy who could make a real run at being a top 10 guy, maybe even a top 5 guy, but certainly not there yet. It's my opinion.
Yeah.
But you know, if you picked him to win the Masters, you know, I'd be surprised. It would be a lot to win that young, but
who's your square bet? Who's your square bet to win it? Like if gun
Tony's
to head.
My square bet. Tony's my square bet. That's square. My sharp bet is probably someone else.
I'm saying like gun to head, you had to pick.
Oh, Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, Scottie. Yeah,
Scottie Scheffler.
Because I mean, dude, if the putter's on that week, like, do you think that he should? Do you think he should bust out the broomstick or no?
He should go to a mallet. Even Rory told him to go to a mallet. That was pretty pretty wild. And Rory's like, yeah, I think he should switch to a mallet.
Dude, you know that he's like been using that thing in
he's
the backyard,
pissed, dude. Dude, hit Scotty's putting. He threw the ball into the woods. Like he's been, if you've been watching him, like I've been kind of sweating him a little bit because we had some bets on him. And like,
didn't you have him clearly, in JT matchup?
That's right. Yeah. He did take care of JT, at the Waste Management. That was a good one. Yeah. We had some big size on that. And
he's so good.
Scotty putted it into a bunker on 18. It is so bad.
It's really mental for him at this point.
Yeah.
He needs to make a change.
And like his ball striking is unbelievable. So we'll see. I think he should just change because it can't get worse, you know? So, you know, I think the math says just take a shot at it. Like it's not going to get any worse and it could only get better. So, my square bet would be Scotty. Why? Who would you pick? Yeah. Who would you pick if gun to head?
Rom.
You needed Rom. Rom. Yeah, Rom was the only other person I considered. I just don't know how Liv, like being so off his schedule is gonna work.
That's
out
true.
For him.
Yeah.
But I think those are the only two you could conceivably pick.
And
watching Scotty putt, it makes you want to pick Rom.
Yeah. The PGA will not be happy if a Liv player wins to start off the major championship season.
It certainly could happen. Rom is a serious threat. He's probably the second favorite going in, or if not the favorite after kind of Scotty's recent struggles. So, okay, we have our square plays. We have our other square plays because of my Tony Finau plays square as fuck. And we'll see what happens, man. But thanks for coming on again. I'm happy to have you as the first repeat guest, a monumental moment in podcast history. And I'm sure you'll be our first three-peat guest as well. You know, keep the streak alive. But seriously, thanks for coming on. Everybody who wants to, you know, learn like what it takes to crush props, crush NBA, TCE, Discord, I'm putting a link in here. This is going to give you, you know, a front row seat to people who do this at an incredibly high level. So hop in there, hang out with Drew, ask him some questions, and Yeah, man. Thanks again for coming on. I can't wait to have you back for the third time.